Patricia T. O'Connor joins us now, as she does every month, to talk about the English language. And we take your calls when she's here at 646-829-3985. That's our new number, our new caller number, 646-829-3985. And, Pat, it's always you always have something interesting to talk about. What do you want to talk about today?
Well, I want to talk about gloriously ungrammatical song lyrics. But before we start, I wanted to mention one thing. I really enjoyed this last interview about Grant Wood. As you know, I'm from Iowa, and some friends just came to visit my husband and me from Iowa. They're from Iowa City, which is Grant Wood country. And they told us a very unusual story. They had been to the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens a couple of days earlier, and they saw a beautiful big tree, and the label on it was, I kid you not, Caucasian wing nut. That's the name of the tree.
I thought you were going to say it was a Grant Wood.
Well, no. It was made of wood, but it's called Caucasian because it's from the Caucasus, mm-hmm. and wing nut because of the shape of its seeds. Mm. Caucasian wing nut.
I think I've met a few people I could call that. So anyway, you're going to talk about song lyrics, ungrammatical
right.
song lyrics?
Right.
Most of them are ungrammatical, aren't they?
I think they probably are in some way or other. At least liberties are taken because they're part of music. They aren't. They don't exist in a vacuum. But I'm always getting mail from people complaining about some song lyric or other.
Why do they complain? Isn't
someone supposed to say lie instead of lay? And well,
you
of
mean
course,
lay, lady, but, lay. Yeah, it
well,
should be
yes.
lie, lady, lie,
right.
lady, lie.
Right, and things like that. And I always respond that, you know, there are different. We have different expectations from speech and from written English, and then song lyrics are in a category all by themselves because they're really part of the music, and they have to be shaped according to rhyme and meter and whatnot. Now, a brilliant lyricist.
Oh, wait, Lie, Lady, Lie would
right.
have worked, but it just
well,
wouldn't have sounded it, good.
Right. The vowels wouldn't have sounded right in his mouth.
In some cases, it's just a matter of rhymes. There are some songs I try to correct,
mm-hmm.
but of course I can't. My Girl, I don't know if you remember that, but The Temptations,
uh-huh.
and he says, I'd guess you'd say, what can make me feel this way? Well, you don't
yeah.
say it, you ask it. But
right,
I
right.
guess you'd ask would not work
right.
there.
No.
And only task rhymes
no.
with it.
No.
Or the Beatles, I ran a comb across my head. I would run a comb across my hair, wouldn't
Well, maybe
I?
It was a bald person. You know, they were.
Why would he do that?
That's true. Well, one of my big irritants, I mean, I'm all for poetic license, but I think you have to draw the line somewhere. And I think it's probably at Neil Diamond's line, songs she sang to me, songs she brang to me.
Oy, oy, oy.
Yeah. Now, if this had been Cole Porter or Ira Gershwin, I think we could have come up with something better. But Neil Diamond is not a poet. He's a musician. So he, you know.
And if Cole Porter had done it, it would have been some kind of a witty
thing. Oh, it would have been extremely witty.
Working on.
Extremely witty. Even if ungrammatical, it would have been witty. But brang is not witty.
No. So what are some of the ones that you have?
Well, what immediately pops to mind is you is or is you ain't my baby.
Well, should we listen to a bit?
Yes.
I got a gal who's always late. Anytime we have a date, but I love her. Yes, I love her. Walk right up to her gate and see if I can get it straight, 'cause I want her. I'm gonna ask her, is or is you ain't my baby.
Now, we played a bit more of that than we would have normally, because it's just such a great performance by Louis Jordan.
Oh, yeah. Who wrote that with Billy Austin in 1943. But, you know, it's interesting about this song because different artists will clean up some of the lyrics.
But you can't change "is you is" or "is you ain't."
Well, no, not that part. But later they get to use "is still my baby, baby." Mm-hmm. And I know that Diana Krall sings "you will always be my baby, baby." Mm-hmm. And it's fine. It's that first line that has to be preserved as it is. And I think that's what's
now,
makes
is there
successful.
Anything wrong with that? We understand that he's playing with the language.
Oh, of course. Of course. And
I mean, you could do "Are you or aren't you my baby?" and it would be so dull.
"Are you or aren't you?" You'd have a leftover unfilled syllable.
Is "ain't" part of the problem? Here's another song.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away.
Chrissy then proceeds to say, I know.
No, but actually, he could have said, there's no sunshine when she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it would have been as popular a song. I think somehow that starting it off with "ain't" makes it more bluesy, and it works better. Bill Withers.
Mm-hmm. But ain't gets used a lot in
oh,
songs.
Oh, yeah, "ain't she sweet." And "I ain't got nobody and nobody cares for me." That was 1915.
Well, "I ain't got nobody." Of course, that's a double problem there.
Absolutely.
Double negative.
But obviously, that's written to be deliberately ungrammatical. There's no error in there.
We have another song that we want to listen to a little bit.
Baby, I'ma want you. Baby, I'ma need you. You're the only one I care enough to hurt about. Maybe I'm a crazy, but I just can't live without your loving and affection.
Well, I'm not a fan of that
right.
song.
Right, I'm not either, but that's a good example of...
Are they being wry, this
Well,
Brad
it's sticking
group?
In. It's just sticking in a sort of a hum sort mm-hmm. of syllable to fill up space.
If Ed Koch sang it, he just would have said, "Baby, I'm a
But I think my favorite of all was sent in by a reader who's a fan of yours, Tom from the Casement Fund. And he sent in the song that I think takes the cake for all these. Here it goes. "Is I in love, I is."
Is I in love, I is. And you're the one you am. Yes, miss, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. Oh, gee, oh, gosh, gee whiz, I am love, I is. Those hairs, them eyes, how come they was? And do I fell, I stay, I dies. Poop-poop-dee-doo, the English I have spoke. It's posoluted a joke. But gee, oh, gosh, gee whiz, is I in love, I is.
Well, that's making fun of the language
right.
in a very big way.
Yes. He even says, "The English I have spoke is posolute a joke."
Now, that just proves that this sort of thing goes back a long, long time. How old is that song?
Right. That one is 1932. Music by Joseph Russell Robinson, lyrics by Mercer Cooks. Hmm. And the composer followed this up a couple of years later with different lyricists with another song, "Is I Gotta Go to School, Ma?"
Well, once you've found a winning
theme. I know,
theme,
you've found a niche.
Our number here is 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. That's we got, in fact, a comment immediately from David in Brooklyn who asks about Alicia Keys' Empire A State of Mind, "Concrete Jungle Where Dreams Are Made Of." That makes no sense.
No. But actually, I have another one, Nine Inch Nails, if anyone's a Nine Inch Nails fan. "Watching fate as it flows down the path we have chose."
Oh.
Which is not only ungrammatical, but makes no sense. If it's fate, then you didn't choose it. Well, what are you going to do?
It just adds to his woes.
Right. Right.
Janet from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. And
by the way, you don't have...
Don't forget, it ain't necessarily so.
Of course.
Oh, right.
Yeah. By the way, you do not have to call in with songs. During this segment, we take calls on anything grammatical and anything involved with the language.
I've called in about the use of logarithm, which you used the other day, and I've heard used, and I don't understand it.
You don't understand a logarithm? Haven't you ever seen a logger on a log? How do you think they stay up there?
Well, I have a theory about that one, that people got tired of using calculus, which was the last trendy mathematical term to throw into any conversation. And it meant any kind of formula or plan or scheme. It was his calculus. So, I don't know.
I hadn't heard that one.
Well, it was short-lived.
I don't think I said logarithm. I think I probably said algorithm, which has to do with the way Google actually works. And the first time I ever heard algorithm, I thought it was about a former vice president dancing.
Touché. Yeah, but okay, so algorithm. How is that used?
Well, algorithms are a form of math that are used in the search engines and all sorts of other things. I'm not exactly sure how it works if you've seen the new film about Facebook, they start off with somebody writing algorithms, which then allows them to create the early version of Facebook. Did you see that film?
I haven't.
It's a lot of fun. But does it bother you that a mathematical term has become part of the people's normal speech?
No. People talk about calculating all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not a mathematical term. Calculus is, but calculated, nope. I think it was a normal term before it was adopted by mathematics.
Gary on Long Island asked, where did the term man-up come from? We're starting to hear that during this election season.
Yeah, I think it means be a man. You know, be masculine, be macho about it, fess up, that sort of thing. There was a whole column about it in the Times Magazine a couple of months ago.
It is, it is kind of weird. It's almost like saying be a man.
Yeah, right.
Well,
and I think it's a little bit exclusive, not non-inclusive, I should say.
Let's take some more calls. Leah from Asbury Park, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, recently a number of times I heard the term used that somebody passed instead of passed away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought it sounded a little callous, and I was wondering if that's something people commonly use now and if that's acceptable.
Well, that's an old locution, isn't it?
Yeah, it is an old locution. I did a blog item about it once. It started out as passed away or passed on, and which, of course, is a euphemism for died, which nobody seems to want to say for some reason. And passed is the short form of these. I don't think it's supposed to be callous, but it strikes me as a little silly. It's not as if you go from one room into another when you die.
But the suggestion is you passed into another realm, perhaps going to heaven.
So.
At least that would be the hope.
I suppose
the alternative would be a lot hotter.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't see it as callous.
Mm. It's we find all, as you point out, we try to find all sorts of different ways of saying so and so died.
Right. Hop the twig.
No, that would be callous. Patricia T. O'Connor is here, and we're taking your calls at 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. Or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Annie points out that algorithms are different from logarithms. Algorithms are step-by-step instructions. So these are mathematical code instructions.
Hmm.
And thank you so much for clearing that up, Annie. We will be back with more right after this.
Mm-hmm. what I'd give to hear those three little words. Man, that's such a wonderful
We're back with Patricia T. O'Connor, author of how many books now on the language?
Five.
Because we're also talking about new updated editions.
Mm-hmm.
How much work goes into the updating of Woe Is I, for example?
A lot.
Because things keep on changing within
right.
language?
Right. I keep files, and it pretty much means the book has to be rewritten. The last time I made two new chapters, separate spelling and pronunciation chapters.
And then these are things where you've learned about things that you'd written about before, but also
right.
the language is changing, isn't
right.
it?
Right. And I might find, for example, that an unusually large number of people want to know how to pronounce a certain word. And it never occurred to me before that it was anything weird. So I'll put it in.
I'm often intimidated by our audience because many listeners have very strong opinions about the language.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever anybody writes something for me that says, how has this impacted on this other thing? I change, what's the impact of this on the other
right.
thing? Because I'm afraid to say impacted.
Uh-huh.
Which I always, in the past, associated with teeth.
Yes. this is called conversion, when a word goes from noun to verb, verb to noun, adjective to adverb, that kind of thing, changes its function. It's been going on since the very beginning of language, and I don't like impact as a verb either, but it's in the dictionaries now, and we'll probably have to live with it. But you don't have to use it if you don't like it.
I had a boss here who used to, during fundraisers, say, we're offering this to incent you to call us now. And I always thought he was trying to incense me. Betsy has written in. She says about ain't, I've read tons of Trollope and find that ain't is often used even by educated mm-hmm. characters. What's that about?
Yes. Well, ain't wasn't really a no-no until about the mid to late 19th century. It used to be a perfectly good contraction, like all the rest.
And the English upper class used it into the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
Lord Peter Wimsey says
yes.
ain't all the time.
Yes. In fact, in the early 20th century, the contraction aren't I, aren't for, mm-hmm. For ain't instead of ain't I, was invented pretty much by the British as a substitute for ain't I. We talk about that in our book Origins of the Species. That's something I found out that I hadn't known.
Let's take a call from Fran from Holmdel, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Oftentimes now when I ask people, how are they? How are you? They will answer, I'm fine, and yourself. Mm. And I haven't heard that, I never heard that 20 years ago, and I just wondered if that was wrong.
Well, it's not wrong.
But I would say, and you?
And you would be more concise and more elegant, I would think. There's no real need to use the reflexive.
Is this something, I don't know why it brings to mind an Irish locution. and how's
right.
yourself?
Right. Uh-huh.
Does it come out of something like that?
Yes. Well, the modern use, I don't think, comes from the Irish use, but in Irish dialect, it was quite common to refer to the man of the house as himself and the woman as herself. How's herself meant how is your wife mm-hmm. or your mother or, the head of your female head of your household. So that was a politeness. Everyone knew who you meant by himself or herself.
So what would you advise Fran to do? To not use it herself?
That's the correct use.
Don't do it, Fran.
Really sloppy.
Right, then don't use it yourself.
Okay, thank you so much for calling us.
Thank you.
And we go now to Paul from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering if you could explain the following. I looked up the word unflappable in six or seven very fat dictionaries,
mm-hmm.
not abridged, well over 1,000 pages, heavy books, and only two had the word in it. and I definitely looked if there was a section at the bottom of the page with the UN prefix.
Right.
So it's not there, and one of the sources told me that the word Zvel was around since 1954, I believe, and therefore, how do you explain the omission after 56 years of its existence?
You mean before now?
I'm sorry.
I see unflappable in the current American Heritage.
That might have been one of the only, you know, one out of
right.
two. That. But how is it that the majority of the dictionaries, well-known names, very fat books, do not have the word at all in the entire book?
I can't explain it. Are they older dictionaries that you're talking about?
No, I'm looking in up-to-date dictionaries. And like I said, the...
Can you give me an example? What is an up-to-date dictionary? Are you talking about the Scrabble dictionary?
No, in other words, the copyrights were well after the word came into existence, which I remember being 1954. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine how old the book would have to be.
Yeah. Well, maybe they just messed up. What do you
right.
think?
Well, lexicographers have choices to make when they're putting dictionaries together, and it may be that they felt it wasn't established enough to the point where it would stay in the language back then when they were printed. But it's definitely in American Heritage now. I would imagine it's in Merriam-Webster's 11th. I would guess it is.
Steve from Dobbs Ferry, what do I say to you? Yes?
Okay. Well, in the desert, you can remember your name because there ain't no one for to give you no pain, followed by a bunch of la-la-la.
Oh,
right,
right.
That's my favorite awful one. And then it doesn't really get any
better. A
horse
with no name, right?
Right. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. You just have to say, what are they talking about?
Well, where are they now?
Yeah, ask that.
Yes has become no, hasn't it? That was yes, wasn't it?
No, it was America.
Oh, it was America. I confused
kind of,
those groups. Gee, I was making a very witty remark. That was absolutely stupid. But, you know, that's not the first time I've done that. Well, thank you so much. Actually, that's often amused me as well.
Okay.
And, by the way, a listener from Brooklyn says, my colleague and I were wondering about the etymology of the word hipster, which does not appear in a Grammophobia search. Although the definition of the term can be debated endlessly, what's the specific etymology? Do we know how that word originated?
I don't know, but I would guess that it came about during the beat era, and it probably was formed on the word hip, meaning cool or au courant.
And that came out of the word hip, didn't it?
I think
are
it,
you hip?
Hip came first, then hip. And then I imagine hipster, because hip was an adjective, was the noun form.
And then hippie.
Yes, although hippie.
Well, hippie is kind of like a nasty way of saying hipster.
I guess so, although hippies don't seem to be in the same school somehow as the beatnik types. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, I think
well, beats would not want to be called beatniks, by the way. That
no.
was a pejorative.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I just heard it recently used as just the descriptive word. Somebody said that Allen Ginsberg was a famous beatnik poet. I think he would have objected to that.
Oh, yeah, beat poet. But I've never heard the term beatnik poet. But... it's probably true, but
Rob in Brooklyn asks, have you noticed some affirmation inflation going on? For the past few years, people have been using absolutely when a simple yes
mm-hmm.
will do.
Yes, yes, I have. I get a lot of mail about that, wrote about it on the blog, and I think it's just because yes doesn't always have enough oomph for people.
Now, we have different people asking about related words. Let's talk about this one first with Anissa, is it, from Forest Hills?
Yeah. Hello. How are you? Enjoy your show. You were speaking previously about using the word algorithm, you know, that kind of popped out of nowhere and became very popular. I've noticed the word paradigm, you know.
But doesn't that mean 20 cent?
It used to be model. Isn't that so? What was wrong with the word model? How is that different from paradigm?
No, as Leonard, I didn't want you to miss Leonard's joke. He says it's only worth 20 cents.
20-cent paradigm.
20 cent. Oh, okay.
I thought it was a rapper.
Yes, a paradigm is a model.
No, 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 not paragon. Paradigm.
D-I-G-M.
No, paradigm. A paradigm is a model.
Right.
Well, she's asking why not just say model.
Yeah, they used to say the new model of, you know,
right,
whatever. Now they're talking about the new paradigm.
It's only because model doesn't sound trendy enough.
Right.
It That's doesn't seem wondering. To have the pizzazz.
On the other hand, is there anything wrong with saying paradigm?
There's nothing wrong with saying it.
No, there isn't. But I mean,
word.
I was an English major, and when I started seeing paradigm, I'm thinking, like, what's, you know, why are they saying paradigm? I didn't understand why this word had popped out of nowhere. Well, and then I realized, obviously, everybody was saying it, so it was like a new thing. So I realized it has something to do with trends.
Right, as long as you don't mix it up with paragon. People mix it with paragon sometimes, which is ridiculous. Paragon is a... you know, a chief example of something. And another P word that bothers me is parameter.
Oh, well, hold on a second, because I was just going to put Linda on from Princeton on that very matter. Hi, Linda.
Oh, hi. This is so cool. Listen, two things. Yeah, parameter versus perimeter. I constantly hear people saying, well, within the parameters, we've, you know, a parameter is a variable as far as I remember from mathematics.
Yes.
Second thing is, you know, I'm a fan of Charles Saunders Peirce, who developed the philosophy of pragmatism, but his word pragmatic was so often misused that he delineated his philosophy later by calling it pragmaticism.
Oh.
So you hear all these people saying, oh, it's pragmatic, meaning, well, it's expedient, let's do it because we have to, and it's complete misuse of the word. The other one you just reminded me of was epitome. People always say, through paragon, it's the epitome of such and such. Epitome just means an average or a usual thing, I found.
I think you'll find, I was a philosophy major too.
Mm-hmm.
And
God help you.
It used to bother me when I'd see these terms like the Peirce paradigm
paradigmatic.
I'm sorry, paradigmatic, misused, at least in my terms. But people, there's the language of philosophy and rhetoric, and then there's normal everyday English. And I think in normal everyday English, people are not going to use pragmatic the same way that Charles Peirce did.
Yeah.
So I think you have to give people a little bit of slack. Not everyone studied philosophy. And these terms do come to have their own uses.
We're going to sneak one more call in here. Brendan from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. I noticed the other day you had a problem with the plural of refuge.
Just because I was reading fast, but can I do a? You know, I make mistakes all the time. Can I issue a generalized mea culpa right now for all of the mistakes I will be making over the next however many years I'm on the show?
Oh, we love your mistakes. They're so witty.
But what did I say? I can't remember now.
You were saying refuges.
Oh, yeah, right. I wanted to say refuges.
You were thinking of centrifuges.
No, I wasn't. I was reading wrong.
It took me years to pronounce the word intransigent. Or intransigence.
Yeah, for a while I thought that was about somebody who'd had a sex change operation. If you want to ask Pat a question, you could email her directly at mailbox@gramophobia.com. You can also click on Pat's blog at gramophobia.com to see a selection of language questions from WNYC listeners. You can go to your local bookstore and find a slew of books by her. And if that's not enough, well, she's going to be back with us on November 17th. And that, I'm looking forward to that.
See you then.
Prepare your questions for that visit. And also keep on sending her stuff at mailbox@gramophobia.com. Thank you so much, Pat.